a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
All right, it's that time. Advanced Medicine is on. Dr. Rashid Batar is here with me. And Dr. Batar, I do wish I was with you yesterday too on the air, but I want to revisit a couple of stories I did from yesterday. One, a big study showing that organic food is in fact better for you based on pesticides being harmful to you. Not like we didn't know that, but the fact that mainstream media has picked up on it's got to be having them shaking and quaking in their boots because Monsanto might have to run for cover.
Well, I think that the propaganda machine may have failed Monsanto and some of these other companies that are allowing the propagation of this, insecticides, pesticides, and all this other stuff being safe. So maybe their propaganda machine failed and this may have slipped through. Or do you think it's really setting a new precedent? I mean, I don't know which one it is, but interesting that.
Dr. Batar, I think in this case it's rather interesting because it's coming out of the European Union. You know, the Parliament did a study, so it's like one of those where they can't claim it's anti-GMO activists. I mean, it's really coming from within a community that's trying to assess this and say, hey, maybe there's a lot of undue industry influence that hasn't allowed us to review it at this level. But the fact that these pesticides alter and harm neurology or nerve cell function, brain cell function, especially little children, it's not a shocker to us. And many people that have listened to us for years, but it's now reaching a larger audience because it's something that's much more difficult to just kind of ignore.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully more and more of these things will come out and things that have been covered, this type of subject and other types of subjects that have been covered in natural news and other types of sites that carry that type of information. This could be qualified under one of Super Don's moments of duh.
But, yes.
Of course, getting it out more in mainstream, it becomes interesting. And I think that perhaps if you start looking at with Trump's administration now, when they talked about the vaccine injury aspect with autism and the mercury components and the toxicity issues and making it, almost propelling it, forcing it into the mainstream, whereas before it was always considered to be something that is not talked from the pulpit, from the mainstream media, but now they had no choice to cover it because the president of the United States has mentioned it on his campaign trail. So maybe there's more stuff that's becoming aware to the public. I mean, we know the public's becoming more aware, but as far as the media, mainstream media is starting to cover some of this stuff. It's interesting that it's moving in that direction. Let's see what happens, but it's nice to see it. It's nice
I think
every time you hear it.
It's still a little, they're reluctant to do so because of the economics at play. I mean, they still rely upon the Monsantos and the pharmaceutical industry for advertising, but there's a certain point where a study like this comes out through the European Union, and to ignore it would be, accelerating the death of the mainstream media because it becomes so obvious that, they can't cover a legitimate news story like this.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, when you start looking at some of the other countries and their lawsuits that they have filed, like I think Monsanto had, 3,000 or so lawsuits that have been filed against them in India alone and some of these other countries where Monsanto's facing lawsuits. And then you've got other, isn't it like Microsoft also, I think, was Bill Gates was facing some huge lawsuits in some third world countries because of his involvement with the vaccination program that they had put out. So there's a lot of things where mainstream media doesn't cover that. This is all found in the alternative news. And you never hear about it on CBS or NBC or Fox. Some of these things with how many lawsuits Bill Gates for his supposed charity work is facing or in other nations or Monsanto and these other types of companies that have done more detriment than they have benefit to mankind. So now mainstream media, as you said, trying to pick up some of these things or maybe attempting to do it reluctantly, perhaps. It's still refreshing to see it. But, it's kind of good that they don't cover it, Robert, because for people that are in your shoes, it allows you to shine like a very bright star, right?
Well, I know the people will say, I used to be on with Jerry Doyle, his show over the years, and he would say, all right, Robert's right again. Robert, what are you going to do now that everybody else is saying what you're saying? I'm like, dude, I'm actually, you know, I know it's kind of jokingly that we're like, well, darn it, they're eking into our territory. But honestly, they're never going to catch up as much as I'd like for them to, because it would mean that we have transformed as a culture and a society to embrace organic living, more holistic living, if you will. But I'm just, I'm hopeful for the future, at the same time realistic that the vast majority of people at any given time typically are not open to these things, because it means taking responsibility for your life and your health. And let's face it, there are very few on a percentage scale people that are willing to embrace all aspects of what it takes to be healthy. We're still a nation and a people by and large that look to point at others or blame others for our ailments or ills. And we're not necessarily speaking to them, although they're welcome to listen to this show, but they might not like the message of empowerment.
Yeah, exactly. It's empowerment and self-responsibility. I mean, accepting responsibility and understanding that you need to do something proactively to make a change, whatever that change may be, whether you're talking about your own health and wellness, whether you're talking about preventive measures to make sure that you're growing your own food or being involved in a more sustainable pattern of growth food, of bringing in nourishment into your own systems. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to grow a garden, but just becoming more sustainable, whether it's, you know, from a financial perspective, educational perspective, spiritual perspective. You hear the thunder?
Yeah. Are you cranking that thunder out, man? We like the sound.
North Carolina.
That's happening.
North Carolina's got some serious storms coming through, right? Yeah. But anyway, the point being is, you know, regardless of what the changes are, it's that responsibility. Empowerment is one, and taking responsibility for your own self and not blaming other people. It's kind of like, remember when we were talking about the Second Amendment, and we were talking about, but it's the same thing as saying that firearms are the reason for all this violence. It's kind of like saying spoons are the reason we have obesity in our nation.
Right.
It's an absurd statement to make. You know, we have to take responsibility.
Well, and I said this about what's happened in Great Britain over the weekend. Another horrible attack, you know, and I said, listen, I really wish that the Great Britain had the right to keep and bear arms, because if you see somebody coming at you with a knife or a machete and you pull out a Glock and you end it right there, would that be preferable to seven people getting stabbed and hacked up? Of course, some would argue, oh, well, what if they miss? I'm like, well, look, the fact that nobody was there until the police arrived to shoot him dead means that you're willing to sacrifice those that are sacrificable until the authorities come in. Why couldn't a British citizen be capable of utilizing a firearm as an American is to stop a crime from happening?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. It's interesting being in different countries and traveling while I'm lecturing in different places. I'm sure you've seen this too. Some people are just appalled that Americans carry weapons, you know, and they see it as kind of like the Wild West mentality, and yet the whole purpose of having firearms or owning a firearm is to prevent violence. Nobody picks on somebody who's strong or the perceptions that they're strong. It's when people are weak and they don't have any power, that's when the bullies will prey on them. And so the whole purpose of being strong or having a mighty military for a nation, it's to ensure peace. That's the whole thing. I mean, the right to bear arms ensures peace is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and it's much like having an immune system to protect yourself against what? May there be an invading army, if you will, like a bacterial infection or something along those lines, or a cancer that would overgrow. And of course, that's not necessarily caught. We don't talk about catching cancer as much as we create it from within due to our improper lifestyle and other factors. But the idea is that people that don't like firearms would have you disarm your immune system in that sense, that same analogy.
And that's a very, very good analogy, actually, because you cannot have cancer if you have an intact immune system. The only time you can get cancer, as you know, is when the immune system has been compromised. And it's the same thing here. You're not going to have the cancers of society attacking people if the immune system is intact. It can't happen. But when you don't have an intact immune system, i.e. you don't have a population that can protect itself, that's when those cancers start to prey on them. So it's a perfect analogy.
Well, there's an interesting story here on Fierce Farm. It says cancer costs are up, but there's more to the story than rising prices report says. I'm not sure what the more to the story is, but I would say the more to the story is, if they're going to ask me a question, not that they are, but if they did, it would be that you're spending all the money wrongly. You're throwing it at things that are improper in terms of addressing cancer, other than disastrously destroying the entire terrain of the body and then destroying the immune system in the process, or what was left of it in a person who's already suffering from cancer. So, you know, the idea is that we don't speak against wanting to address cancer, but we would do it much differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And when looking at the issue of cancer comparison that you made, you know, cancer is considered it's not an opportunistic infection as like a bacteria, parasite, the virus, mycoplasma, any of those type of things. But there is an opportunity that cancer needs in order for it to actually be able to perpetuate itself, and that is the opportunity that I'm talking about. Is that there's a combination. It's either one, a significant malnourishment at that very point, or that very cell that starts that apoptotic cascade to begin, the suppression of that apoptotic cascade to begin, and mm-hmm. and the suppression, not only this suppression of apoptosis, but also the uncontrolled cellular proliferation, all these different characteristics of cancer, that at that point where it starts, it's either one, a severe lack of nutrients at that point, or it's a severe toxicity at that point, usually a combination of both. And so it comes to that opportunistic thing, meaning that there has to be a malnourishment on board, toxicity at that point for the cancer to start, or toxicity with a concomitant malnourishment at that point for the cancer to start. So again, you know, talking about that buffer where you said the immune system needs to be intact. And if it's not intact, then you're not going to have the immune system is not intact, that's when cancer comes out. That's, or cancer becomes a problem. That's the component that I think if more people start to understand that this is a cause and reaction type, or cause mm-hmm. and the causation aspect is one part of it, but the response,
yes.
you know, cancer is a response type issue. And it actually comes down to a lot of the pathology. It's a response type issue to the actual underlying causation. So yes, toxicity causes the problem. And yes, malnourishment causes the problem. But there are people that can have that malnourishment and toxicity and either may not get the cancer, or if they get the cancer, they'll respond much faster.
We're up on a break here, Dr. Bitar. We got a lot of great discussion here when we get together and do advanced medicine. Check it out, robertscottbell.com. Links as well to medicalrewind.com. We'll explain it all when we come back.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
I was talking to another DO just the other day, Dr. Bitar, doctor of osteopathic medicine. They've been given equivalency to MDs in the United States, although many of the DOs tend to be more gravitating toward holistic integrative therapies, although it's not always, but it could be the case. And he was talking about sensitivity and advancements to, you know, tests to detecting cancer like Oncoblot and stuff. And then and I thought, there's nothing wrong with detecting it years before anybody else will in a harmless way. But the question becomes, what do you do about it when you've been given this information? And unfortunately, modern oncology and modern medicine, even if they got advanced notice of the cancer, all of their therapies would probably cause the cancer to inflame more and sooner, rather than truly changing the diet, the lifestyle, the building up the immunity and things. And of course, it's going to manifest differently in each person, even though there could be a similar or same cause.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a point that I was trying to make, not as eloquently as you obviously did just now, but that was the point I was trying to make before the break, that why is it that some people respond to treatment better than others, or why is it some people don't get the cancer even though they've got that toxicity and or malnourishment that are on board at the same time? And that's really what it comes down to, is what you just said. It's one of those components that we have to start appreciating and recognizing that empowerment is one part of it and responsibility is the other part of it. And that when a person is empowered with the knowledge, and when they take personal responsibility and they start, as opposed to not taking responsibility and feeling like that they're a victim and that they are, you know, poor me type. And this is where I think that's the fuel that fuels the cancer. I'm not saying the people that have cancer have self-pity. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that they are people that see themselves as vulnerable, see themselves mm-hmm. as the prey, see themselves as a victim.
Right.
And as opposed to really understanding that it's a blessing when you've gotten a warning sign like cancer.
Sure.
Because, you know, just think about it, Robert, the person that gets shot, a person that, you know, gets hit by a bus or something, they didn't have a warning sign.
Or the heart attack.
The heart attack.
Oftentimes, right. They don't have a warning if they don't know what to detect well before it happens. And, of course, that could be their only message and warning. Whereas cancer, you're given a heads up, typically, in a long, big way.
Exactly.
Obviously, if somebody is diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, dude, you missed a hell of a lot on the way to get that diagnosis. But what do you think, Dr. Right. Batar, about these hypersensitive, if I can call them that, tests like Oncoblot? You've mentioned them before as far as, are they legitimate tools? Are they outrageously priced over $1,000 a piece? I mean, are they beneficial, helpful? What's your thought on that?
Well, Oncoblot right now is not being utilized. They're not testing right now because the Chinese company that came in and put in like $120 million into the company. So they're trying to automate it. The process right now. And I was actually one of the first doctors doing the Oncoblot, you know, I don't know how many years ago it was now, but mm-hmm. In fact, I think we covered that in one of our shows about
we did. We talked about it a while
ago.
Back. Yeah. That's why I thought it'd be good to bring it up again. Cause it's been, you know, again, I'm not anti-science at all. I mean, I love technological advancements when they're, you know, helpful and they can help us to guide us, to give us a heads up on things. There's nothing wrong with that. The question is the technology real or is it just too inaccessible? I don't know since we last talked about it.
Well, I think the pricing is about the same. Dr. Murray, who developed the test, actually very, very prolific writer and well-published, over 1,000 studies, actually went to the same high school that I went to in Owensville, Missouri, and he could not believe that we went to the same high school. He kept on challenging me in questions. Of course, we were 30 years apart, but
yeah.
He passed, I guess last year he passed. Mm. And the technology is sound technology. The thing is that it's based upon a molecular weight and they're doing a protein assay, and basically each different cancer exhibits a different assay. So it's based on the ENOX2 protein, and you know, is the science sound? Yes, the science is sound. I have had patients that had negative oncoblots, but ended up having cancer. So that would be a false negative.
Sure.
If I have a testing methodology, I would rather have a false positive rather than a false negative, because if you have a false negative, the person may get a false sense of security that there's nothing going on and they actually
sure.
have it, versus a false positive. Okay, well, you've been told that you have something, but then on further test workup, it's revealed that you don't. So that, you know, at least you got a higher index of suspicion if somebody says a false positive rather than getting a false sense of security that it's not there.
Sure, but Dr. Batar, hold your thought here because we're going to come back to this. This is a great discussion. I was just thinking of what would it change, you know, in terms of what we talk about in diet and lifestyle, the things you wrote about in the international best-selling book, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. If you're given a heads up 20, 30 years in advance because it's so sensitive at a stage 0, it may detect something. I mean, wouldn't we want to encourage people to live cleanly anyway, or are there nuances to what you would respond to? Given the information all those years ahead, unique to that individual. We're going to be right back with that. Hold that thought, because I think your wheels are turning.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, asking the tough questions of Dr. Batar today. Just thinking that I would be, you know, curious because, you know, I've heard about these oncoblots that say, hey, we picked it up at stage 0. You're thinking, man, that's well ahead of what these technologies thus far, or even mammograms and breast cancer, which we concerned ourselves with because ionizing radiation can cause it. I don't believe that the oncoblots are causing anything. Correct me if I'm wrong, based on the tests that you described. But the question is, what do you do with that information that's different than what we would already tell people who are coming to us for help?
Well, see, I mean, the question is a loaded question. So the first part is, and I'm sure that's the reason you ask me, because you like asking loaded questions. But,
yes.
You know, oncoblot sensitivity is supposed to be that it'll pick up when there's 2 million cells, the smaller than the tip of the point of a pin. That's how big the cancer is, and it can still be picked up by the oncobots, about 2 million cells, as opposed to conventional testing, which would be close to 6 billion cells would be before they will pick up something. And so from a sensitivity standpoint, yes, it is better. But your question now is, what are we going to do differently? And, you know, I think that when a person sees a test that's positive for cancer, even though it's like 20 years before, I wouldn't say 20 years, Robert, I'd say probably more like 5 to 10 years before other things might pick up. Maybe it's like smacking it upside the head and telling them to wake up, as opposed to just saying, hey, you know, you need to live your life better or you might get cancer, versus getting hit with a baseball bat and saying, hey, you got this problem. So maybe people take it more seriously. So that might be a that might be an advantage of maybe doing the test.
Okay.
For my purposes, in our clinic, we have had 13 people that have come to us. 13 the last time I counted, but that have come to us with a diagnosis of cancer that did not have cancer. So from that perspective, I'm doing the test to basically confirm conventional testing. So we don't diagnose cancer, but we have patients that come in with the diagnosis of cancer, and then I do an oncoblot and I look at their immune system to basically clarify whether it really is a cancer issue. If somebody has an excellent immune system, the natural killer cells are normal, they have no lymphocyte subpopulation disruptions, the CD4, CD8 ratios are where they're supposed to be, their B lymphocytes and CD19s are where they're supposed to be,
right,
and their oncoblot is negative, that person doesn't have cancer. But if a person has a disrupted lymphocyte subpopulation, they have oncoblot that's positive, yes, we are picking that up. Most of the patients have already had a diagnosis of cancer and they're coming to us. But have I had people come to us that have not had a diagnosis of cancer, but they're concerned that they might have cancer, and we've worked them up and we've found that, yes, you do have certain things. I don't tell them to have cancer. I tell them that, look, there's no, you know, your whatever scans you've done have not shown anything. But, yes, your lymphocyte subpopulation is abnormal. Your oncoblot is showing a pattern of something going on. Even just the lymphocyte subpopulation is enough to show that there's a disruption to their natural balance of their immune system. It's enough to then make a person more more attentive, maybe.
Sure, but it's
more
also
proactive to do something.
On the opposite side of the coin, Dr. Bitar, I can't imagine that if they come up with a negative on the oncoblot and all the other factors are looking really good, that you say go out and eat what you want, drink as much as you want, smoke as much as you want. I mean, you know, it's like you're not going to give them that opposite. Okay, now you're free to do whatever garbage you want.
Oh, no, because it's the garbage that's going to lead to, I don't care how good the oncoblot or the the lymphocyte subpopulation is, we're all susceptible to this issue with the environment. And when I say environment, I'm just talking about what you're breathing. I'm talking about the stuff you're putting in your body, the environment, your internal environment. So, you know, the thing is that your question is a very interesting question. But again, we're not doing this from a screening perspective. We already have people that have the diagnosis of cancer. I think that the use of these tests, Robert, are beneficial. I do think that they also provide people with a little bit more clarity. It lets some people know that, look, it's just basically like having a punishment that a child is able to maybe see what the punishment would be. And so they are more likely to be towing the line that they're supposed to, as opposed to somebody who's never been punished and just is a pie in the sky type of concept and they've never been punished. So maybe it's that type of a thing. And I'm not talking about punishing children here. I'm talking
I see connected cause and effect. I look at my life and, you know, the ailments I suffered the first 0 to 24 years of age, right? And then looking at my elders who had suffered only in their older years with cancer and other things, and have inquired them about their childhood and their health history to the best of their ability. They were pretty much healthy. They didn't suffer from any chronic diseases like I did. And so for me, that was, I guess, my oncoblot test was just my inquiry, my interest in my suffering. And I said, oh my gosh, if these guys and gals, my elders, were healthy when they were kids and I wasn't, and they're suffering with cancer in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, I'm not going to make it to my 40s. So I could see cause and effect in that link. And then I still had a lot to learn about what the causes really were and correct them. So I made the changes in my diet and lifestyle. And when people say, why are you so committed to this? It's like, well, I could see my future. But I guess some people will need something like these official tests. And I guess whatever you need, if you need it, you know, happy to provide it, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think that depending on the provider as well, you know, what is their goal? Are they treating people that have cancer, or are they screening to help a patient become aware if they've got early stages of cancer, or Are there lifestyle wellness, health and wellness type people to give guidance as to what a person can do to prevent cancer? You know, depending on the type of provider and what their goal is in their practice or in their clinic or in their business, I think that would also change that component, meaning that for me, I'm using the Oncoblot in lymphocyte population when people already have cancer, they're already coming to us, they need to know what their status is. And when I'm doing this stuff, I'm actually using it like the lymphocyte subpopulation. That's to get a baseline to monitor the changes that we're making as we're doing the treatment. It's almost like a validation,
sure,
and a monitoring of the response to treatment more than it is anything else. But it is a screening tool too, because you can kind of see what's going on. In fact, I think at the Truth About Cancer, if you remember when that question was asked about cancer markers, and I gave the I've had a lot of people that have contacted the office and some of them have become patients that said that that was a very key moment for them personally when they heard my response to the question about the cancer markers, as opposed to why a person should do cancer markers. And my point was that they're useless. Cancer markers don't mean anything, and you should really be looking at the status of your immune system. So, you know, again, it's depending on the clinician, the justification of using these tests and what the clinician's goal is. I think if you are treating cancer, you almost have to do these things to know where you are. If it's just for using from a screening tool, screening modality, I would probably tend to agree with you that, you know, at a screening level, you know, we don't want to intimidate or scare people, but sometimes it's a good thing to kind of make them more attentive and making them more aware of the consequences, because cancer is an abstract thing that as soon as the person says, oh, you know, you've got a picture that could be consistent with cancer, then they may wake up and hear the message a little bit louder and clearer. Mm. And there's never anything wrong with listening, getting the message louder and clearer. Not to say that we're fear-mongering and trying to scare them, but at the same time, if somebody becomes more receptive to the message, I think that I don't think
sure.
there's anything wrong with that.
Because, you know, at the same time, we've acknowledged that their cancer cells all the time, right, are produced. Now, our immune system normally would keep it in check. Your detox pathways will throw it on out. But, you know, the question is, during that diminishment of immune function, during the depletion of the minerals, during the accumulation of environmental wastes, toxins, heavy metals, mercury, etc., all of these things degrade the ability to keep those things in check that are normally occurring just because that's life on planet Earth. And, of course, these things, you know, as I look at it, these technological leaps in identification and diagnosis perhaps are giving people that need that kind of visual, if you will. I need it in black and white. Show me the paper, right? Whereas not everybody needs that, but I'd rather have access to it or an option should that become something that we would desire to do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I agree with you with that, yeah.
All right.
And people, I was just going to say, the people, mm-hmm. you know, when you give them clarity, sometimes when you have clarity, the message is received in a manner that's also conducive to them making a change that's necessary to benefit themselves. Sometimes when the message isn't clear, mm-hmm. and they lack that clarity, then the message isn't received as well. And that, you know, may promote the sense of, it's not a big deal type of thing. And then that's when we get caught.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's an interesting article here. We got a couple of minutes before break from Medical News Today. It says, drinking tea may alter women's gene expression. And there was another women-focused article that talked about exposure to household chemicals impacting female thyroid health. Again, there seems to be something distinct, despite a lot of the people on the political left that don't want to think there's anything different between men and women. Apparently, there is. And although we may not understand all of it, the reality is now they're seeing it biochemically, biologically as well, in the way we would interact with different things here. So, you know, I'm not sure. Of course, this is referencing the issue of epigenetics, too.
Well, I was just going to say, if you look at the work of Bruce Lipton, and the genetic expression it's actually the environmental trigger that causes the gene to express differently. Both these things, the thyroid in girls may be impacted by household chemicals, and drinking tea may alter women's gene expression. This could, again, be qualifying as a moment of doubt, because if we start with the premise of Bruce Lipton's work, which I completely agree with, it's the environmental trigger, i.e., in this case, either household chemicals or tea, mm-hmm. that are causing the expression, the triggering of the expression of the genetic, of the genotype, essentially, that's going to cause a difference in response. And this isn't just specific to women. It's men, sure. too. You know, they probably just looked at the female population. I think women are more susceptible when it comes to subtle changes, because I always say that women are like a Lamborghini Countach. You know, you can only get the parts maybe in one or two places in the world, and the man is more like a more like a 57 Chevy, you can take a lawnmower apart and put it in there and it still works. So that's maybe the only difference, that there's a fine-tuned, high-precision piece of equipment versus a not-so-high-refined piece of equipment. And the reason I say that is because a woman creates life out of nothing. It's not just human women. It's right. All females of all species can create life, whereas a male doesn't have that ability. So I think that there's maybe some subtle things in the female physiology that's different than males, but this would be applicable to males and females. And it goes right back to that triggering of the genetic expression based upon the environmental trigger.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And I agree with you, witnessing the differences in health decline in men and women. Of course, with the endocrine system, obviously it's a more overt kind of manifestation. And we've seen all of the alterations of endocrine interaction on our planet. Of course, it's going to play itself out much more obviously in the female system that gives life, if you will, gives new life. So there are things we have to pay attention to. So these are some cool articles, folks. Come to the Robert Scott Bell Show website, robertscottbell.com. And if you need to listen again, good news here, medicalrewind.com, the easiest access point to hundreds and hundreds of hours of Dr. Batar and I discussing advanced medicine together. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back to wrap it up, this week's Advanced Medicine with Dr. Rasha Batar, after this.
Live around the world,
the Robert Scott Bell Show. Robert Scott Bell Show.
We're about halfway through 2017. If you're listening live to the Robert Scott Bell Show Advanced Medicine Edition with Dr. Rashid Batar, you can find Dr. Batar also online, drbuttar.com. It's linked up in the show notes, robertscottbell.com. Here's a headline. U.S. government has already paid out $159 million in damages to vaccine-injured children just in this year. That's half the year. And, of course, that doesn't include all the vaccine injuries, because still so few people as a percentage even know there's a vaccine injury compensation program that you have to go to petition the court, because you can't sue the makers of the vaccines.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It's $159 million this year. I mean, we haven't even hit the six-month point yet, Robert. That's amazing. Yeah. Isn't that more than it was last year considerably?
I think it's up higher, yeah. The more they increase the schedule, the worse it seems to get. And of course, they played heavily with the flu shot. There's huge issues with the HPV vaccine, which have been promoted heavily as well. And of course, all of the MMR scares. And so this is not necessarily getting better yet, because the message hasn't reached where all it needs to go. And that's why I say, even, as the mainstream media covers, as we open today, some of the stories that we go, yeah, we agree with that. There's still a lot more communication that needs to be done. So we've still got our work cut out for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think last year, and maybe my numbers are off, but I think last year it was like under $200 million the whole year, I think, that they paid out. Wasn't like $189 or something?
I think
like
so. Maybe, yeah, maybe it's definitely accelerated. Yeah. We're up over, $3.6 billion since 1989. When they started doing the payouts, even though the act came into being at 86, it didn't really activate till 88 and 89. So $3.6 billion out. And again, there's still such cognitive dissonance and absurdities on the mainstream media part to keep claiming that vaccines are safe and effective, despite the evidence to the contrary and the lack of evidence in support of that statement.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. There's so much to this, Robert. And you start asking all sorts of strange questions. And one of my questions, that just while you were just making the statement you did, and the thing that was going through my mind is, at what point after
$3.6 billion, yeah.
Yeah, so at what point after $3.6 billion that's been paid out do people start, at what point do you say, okay, enough is enough, there's something going on here? And of course, from the perspective of the mainstream doctors that don't think that there's an issue because of all the propaganda that they're fed, they don't know about that there's been $3.6 billion in damages paid out to children of vaccine children that have been vaccine injured. Yeah. I mean, you ask regular doctors, like, oh, that's been debunked. There's been no such thing. They have no idea that anybody's gotten paid anything for a vaccine injury.
Mm-hmm. It is stunning. Again, these are learned people, but again, indoctrination and you know, dogma induction, if you will, via injection, can happen to the smartest of us, right? We talk about cognitive ability. It doesn't mean people are using their God-given ability to question, right? Critical thinking skills are kind of drummed out when you become a doctor.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very true statement. There's no justification for it, though. I mean, just, you know, what about the doctors that didn't get it drummed out of them? There's a reason they didn't. And again, this is that sticking your head in the sand and, you know, saying, la, 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 I can't hear you, I can't hear you, I can't hear you, you know. So
right.
I think that's making excuse for the doctors that have, they say, well, I wasn't taught that. And this is where that power to heal is yours, which, by the way, last week where the phone call dropped, and I think because I listened to it, it was like you thought that I couldn't remember what the power to heal was, but the phone call, I guess that my phone line had dropped, so
yes.
You were like waiting for me. I understood, yeah. So anyway, coming back, that was pretty funny. But anyway, because I listened to it, it was like this big pause, and I'm like, I said the phone.
Give you some grief. It's like your favorite saying, and you forgot it. It's like you must have been jet lagged.
No, I hadn't forgotten it, but you know, I guess that's possible. There's a lot of other stuff. Sometimes I forget what my own name is, but no, I don't.
Listen, behind the scenes, folks, if you understood all the things that Dr. Bitar was involved in, you're like, there's got to be 10 of Dr. Bitar at least. And I, you know, just shake my head and go, you know what? Sometimes you just got to kick back and rest just a little.
Well, I'm working on that. I'm actually, that's going to be one of my agendas this year and next year. Although we are in the process of looking at other, you know, things to expand, but
yeah.
At the same time, you have to start taking a little bit pause to.
Yeah, to you're going to Ukraine to open up a new facility and these things. I was like, come on, man. Anyway, it's always a great time to get together with you. You know that, my friend. And I love bringing the power to heal back where it belongs with each and every one of you all that are out there listening each and every week or 6 days a week, as much as you can handle. Dr. Bitar, it's time to let them know what they need to know.
The power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.